Double Exposure by Michael Bailey. 3 steps from the top, he saw her and almost tripped. It would have been better if he had fallen then and broken his bloody neck. It would have saved a lot of pain, for him at least. She was already numb to pain since she was a little girl. He didn't know that then, but the way she drew his eyes to her should have warned him. It was like when you pass a window and out of the corner of your eye you imagine you see something you shouldn't. Someone getting dressed or undressed. You hesitate and then give in to the urge to look, and by the time you do, they've covered up. All you get is embarrassed. With her, it was in her eyes, that instant before the glaze came over them and all you could see was yourself. In that split second, you felt you were looking into a pit of misery. Then you just thought you imagined it. Her face was so striking, so alive, so full of tease and laughter. How could you think that when she looked so serious and challenging? What does she look like? You have one impression, and the next moment, something opposite. Only the glaze that reflects your own face is constant. All eyes were on him. He could only see her, though. He finished his climb to the deck floor, stepping clear of the circular stair that had carried his feet up. She'd half risen from her seat and then sat back down, her glass of Pernod in front of her. Still, her eyes held his, and he found himself sitting at her table. She told him her name and that she was his new student. He said he never takes students and that he was leaving for Biarritz the next day. "So am I," she had replied. Click. "Damn, I'm sorry, something ran over my foot and startled me." The bright light in the dark room went out again. The roll of negatives had been exposed to the flash of light in mid-development and was plunged into the hypofixative. When they looked at the images of the woman's nude body, black from the light flash seeped right to the edge of the body, creating a stark outline. "Look at that! Quick, expose another of the rolls of film waiting to be developed," he said. In the next hours, they experimented until they ran out of exposed film. He was so excited he couldn't sleep that night, and didn't let her sleep either, pulling at her body in his urgency. In the morning, he was up and out getting more film, and she finally had the chance to escape with her tumbled body into sleep. Not for long, because he immediately wanted her to pose, naked and sleepy, her skin marked by the wrinkles of the sheets. Unable to leave her alone, he touched her, he kissed her, he made love to her day and night. He photographed her as she walked around naked, standing at the window with the shadow of the neck curtain making a mesh on the skin of her breasts, bending forward with her back and buttocks naked and anonymous like a lush fruit. It was nothing new. Her own father had photographed her naked for as long as she could remember. But this was different. She could match him shot for shot, fuck for fuck, idea for idea. It drove him mad, made him beg, made him angry. Her own photographs were getting noticed. Her name repeated and recognised around Paris and beyond. Her photographs were admired and bought as she matched his surreal visions and outrageous experiments and made advances of her own. Her face, her image, was recognised from magazine covers and gallery exhibitions. Her work matched and eclipsed her persona as a model. With him, she shook off the role of the model and took the mantle of the artist. When she looked in the studio bin, she saw a negative amongst the screwed-up paper. She pulled it out and held it up to the light. It was a photograph of her, discarded because it did not meet his exacting standard. "I can make something of this. Use it for a picture," she thought, as she put the negative in her purse. He went apeshit, totally demented. He screamed and ranted and shouted, "Who is the real artist? Me, not you. You are my assistant. You help me. You're nothing without me. Now you steal my picture and put it in your trivial reproduction of my ideas. You think you're so clever, but you're really just a fuck who is smarter than most. But just a fuck, nonetheless." She threw the picture she'd been holding. It smashed on the wall beside his head. "Fuck you," she spat. I do your work, take your photographs so that you can paint, and let you pass them off as your own. And you get on your fucking high horse about a negative you threw away. Out, he bellowed. The studio door slammed, and she was gone. He couldn't bear the silence, the absence, the empty bed. Who knew who she was fucking now? Nothing could calm the raging headaches that overcame him. He raged like a bull in a tight arena, maddened by 100 cuts. Her throat arched white and exposed. He slashed at it with a razor and splashed red ink across the cuts. The gore was pinned to the wall like a crime scene photograph when she came back days later. They rowed and made up, worked in tandem, fucked each other and other lovers as their fame and the demand for their work grew. She adored him, but did not love him. Followed where her sexual desires led her until, inevitably, she lost her heart as well as her head. The love affair that cost her lover's first wife her life burned so bright she married the Egyptian and was gone with him. The man on the crest of the surrealist wave foundered and went under. Drowning, he bought a gun and threatened her, her lover, himself in turn. He made a picture of himself with the pistol and a hangman's rope strung around his neck, made art of suicide. Nothing could bring her back. He cut her eye from a photograph and pasted it onto the swinging pendulum of a metronome. It swung left and right, observing a world that lurched drunkenly. Unable to distinguish between grief and art, he called his creation the object of destruction. Instructions on the picture he made of his mechanical sculpture advised regulating the weight on the pendulum to the temple desired, so the pulse of grief could be captured until the limit of endurance was reached. Thereafter, a hammer should be used to destroy the whole mechanism with a single blow. Nothing could replace her, not fame, not suicide, not art. Beyond their shared bed and shared studio, their lives swam into the core of history of their age. His repute rose strong and enduring as an erection. Hers recorded the depredation of the human spirit, fouled by the torrents of evil that spewed out of the middle of the century. They had joked in bed, fought in the studio, taunted each other with the spirit of sexual freedom. Reality was more outrageous than surrealism. World War more of an adventure than fashion. Her stark black and white images of SS suicides and concentration camp inmates, both dead and alive, are more shocking than the staged absurdities of Dada. She found escape from Dachau promised but never delivered, however much she drank. In the long post-war English years, she never stopped seeking that unattainable peace.